It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 175 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan, and today I'm joined by our friend and yours, John McDermott.
Hello, Tim. How's it going?
It's going well, John. Thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure.
So today, me and John were trying to decide what to talk about, and we've got a lot of new releases just dropped. Obviously, Wave 4 has recently launched. We've got a bunch of new ships here. Both John and I are trying out some new tech and trying to figure out this metagame. So we're not really at a point where we're certain about what's really good yet, specifically in the metagame. So since we don't know what's good, we thought we might talk about things that are bad.
And there are definitely some upgrades and other cards out there that are bad and are worth discussing, so...
And I know Radio TCX is a show known for being very optimistic and positive, so today we're going to try and break that mold, and we're going to look at some upgrade cards, not particularly from Wave 4, but we're going to look at upgrade cards from the whole spectrum, every faction, every format, and talk about some upgrade cards that are just straight up bad.
Yeah, so let's jump right in and discuss some of these cards.
Okay, so before we start throwing cards off and discussing them, we had a couple criteria we were looking at here. We're looking at cards that we think are bad in function. So a lot of times there are cards in the game that are bad based on their point costs. Obviously, we get points rebalancing every once in a while, so I don't want to rule anything strictly out just because it's too expensive, unless it gets down to like that minimum threshold of where it's already like 0 or 1 point and it's still not good. Those we included. But if it's a card that, you know, has an interesting ability, it just costs 12 points, 11 points, whatever, we're not going to include those here because those could vary in value depending on, you know, the changes in the metagame, changes in ship costs and upgrade costs. So we're going to look at cards we think that in function will probably never really have a good purpose. All right, John, so what's the first card up on the docket today?
The first card on our list is a Galactic Republic-only astromech upgrade, R4-P44.
So R4-P44 is 5 points and has the ability, after you fully execute a red maneuver, if there's an enemy ship in your bullseye, gain 1 calculate token. So John, we both agreed that this card is not a good card. Could you explain your thought process on why that's not a good one to run?
Sure. So I think, for the exception of the Torrent, every ship in the Republic faction can use the astromech upgrade slot, and they don't have a lot of red maneuvers that I think would necessarily make it easy to line up a ship in your bullseye. So the Jedi have the sloop, which is probably the best one, but for the most part it's either like Talon rolls or K-turns, or even in the case of the arcs, like hard maneuvers. So I just don't think lining up that bullseye off a red maneuver is super likely.
Well, right. And I mean, you know, the other inherent problem is the benefit you're getting from pulling off something that's pretty difficult to do is not that huge. Just 1 calculate token. So calculate tokens are great when you get them in mass or when they're in addition to other modification you're getting. But just on its own, you know, this astromech is at 5 points right now. Even if it went cheaper, I still don't think I'd opt for it because you've got better astromech options. You've got astromechs that let you perform actions, you know, spend charges to perform actions when you do a red maneuver. Currently similar point cost to this. And I think those would be much better routes there. I think this is a case where a card can be bad based on it's just really hard to pull off with a distinct lack of any real payoff.
Right. And I guess the only kind of redeeming factor of this card is that it's one of the few astromechs that doesn't have a charge value. You just would always get that benefit if you're able to pull off the maneuver successfully. But again, it's going to happen very infrequently.
Well, right. And I think one of the values of the astromech, one of the reasons I like them, is because they do use those charges so they can have more meaningful game influencing abilities and they're not abusable, right? So like R2 astromech is a staple in the game right now. We just saw some point increases to it. Being able to regen shields is hugely powerful. You wouldn't really be able to have that ability in the game if it wasn't capped with a charge limit. We saw in first edition when it wasn't capped that it was becoming a problem. You know, people were abusing it. It was getting used way too much and just like kind of ruining the fun of X-Wing. So having the charge limit gives you those powerful abilities with caps. Here you can see they're trying to balance that out. Okay, we're not going to put a charge limit on this, but we have to really tone down the effect.
Yeah, if you want to vest in an astromech that doesn't have charges, then look at R4 astromech for those extra blue maneuvers. That'd be more worth the points than R4-P44, in my opinion.
All right, so the next one up, this is another one that we started to see now that we've got more Force users in the game. This one's called Brilliant Evasion, and it currently costs 3 points.
Yeah, and Brilliant Evasion is while you defend, if you are not in the attacker's bullseye, you may spend one force charge to change two of your focus results to evade results.
Now, when this card was first announced, especially before we saw point values dropped for it, I actually thought this one would be good. I hadn't thought it all the way through. I just thought, oh, good value there, right? Jedi have a certain amount of force they can use, or force-sensitive pilots in general have a capped amount of force they can use. So being able to get more efficiency out of one would be great, right?
Right, and efficiency on the Jedi is super good, but one of the reasons they have that efficiency is those force charges, which I wouldn't want to spend to get this ability.
Well, right. So, I mean, right now, the force power slot is a little bit, I'd almost call it a handicap for a lot of force-using ships, because it's in lieu of a talent slot in most cases, and there's just so many better talents in the game. A lot of the force power options are mediocre to bad, too expensive, and whatnot. So this one's got some problems definitely right now. Looking at the point value at 3, I mean, this is just the amount of times you're going to get use out of this, I think, is just way less than its value, right? So you don't want to pay that much and not get a lot of uses out of this. It's not worth the 3 points. I'd rather take the bid and just avoid shots altogether.
Right. And the other thing that kind of makes this card a little less viable is that a lot of those mid-range initiative Jedi aren't played a lot. So you either see the lower end ones like Ahsoka or the Jedi Knight, or the higher end ones at Obi-Wan or Anakin. So you're either going to be outmaneuvered or you're going to outmaneuver your opponent. So I feel like I would rather have, 3 points to put into a different astromech or a different modification than spend it on Brilliant Evasion.
Right. It's going to be hard to find a scenario, even if they tick this one down to 2 points, 1 point, where I don't want to invest those resources somewhere else. I guess if they got it down to 0, it would be fine to throw on there until we start seeing some better force powers. But even then, I think, by the time we get to that point, we'll be moving past this card. There's just not enough opportunities where you have to roll 2 focus results to get value out of this, and you're just better off investing that points and that effort in some other upgrade card.
The probability of rolling 2 focus results is pretty low. You're either going to get blanks or you're going to get like 1 evade in a blank.
Right. It would have to be on a ship with more likely 3 agility dice. You're not going to see that on Jedi or Luke Skywalker in a T-65. So unless we see a force user who gets to roll a lot of agility dice and has the opportunity to spend that many points, I mean, that's a pretty narrow case right now. So I don't think it's worth the investment.
I mean, you could throw it on Vader, but for 3 points, I'd rather have hate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, much more reliable.
And since we're talking about bad force upgrades, our next one on the list is Predictive Shot, which also comes in at 1 point.
Yeah, this one just saw a big price cut in the June rebalancing, so it's down to 1 point, and I still don't want to run it. So I think that speaks to the quality of this card all around. Predictive Shot is, after you declare an attack, if the defender is in your bullseye, you may spend 1 force charge. If you do during the roll defense dice step, the defender cannot roll more defense dice than the number of your hit or crit results.
I think the thing that just makes this feel like a bad card to me is I'm kind of against spending force charges for anything that just even feels like a mediocre result, which this feels like. So I'd rather have that force mod for, on defense later, or just straight up use the force to modify my attack dice than spend it to use this ability.
I actually think, this kind of shows the inherent problem of force in the game, where the force mechanic, the force charge mechanic, is actually fine. So ships that even have 1 charge, there's a lot of value in that. And, I've pursued opportunities where I can even throw a force-sensitive crew on a ship that otherwise doesn't have force just to get that 1 charge. So I've really been enjoying Duchess with Fifth Brother right now, just because I can use that Fifth Brother ability offensively to change, spend the charge to change a focus result into a crit result. That's a great way to spend it, or just having it on defense. That's been super reliable. Having the force charge at all is like more valuable than using force power cards. The amount you have to invest to get the effect generally doesn't really do better than just spending a force charge to change a single result. So this is a case where, you may not be investing a lot of points, but like, what's the narrow case here where not only is the defender in your bullseye and you roll a certain amount of hit results that don't exceed your opponent's defense dice, then you spend the charge to narrow it? Well, maybe you already spent a force charge on attack, so now you're down extra force charges, and they still might evade the attack anyway.
Right, and it's important to kind of preface this, but like, I'm thinking of most of these kind of in relation to the Jedi specifically, because I think that's where you're seeing a lot of force upgrades put. If you think of like the Jedi Knight, most people are going to want to spend a force to do the fine-tuned control ship ability to get that extra reposition. At that point, you only have 1 force charge left, and I don't want to spend it on Predictive Shot.
No, absolutely not.
There might be some value here in, say, like a ship that has like two red dice and you're shooting a ship, maybe like Darth Vader could be like range three through a gas cloud. But again, like that's a super niche like situation you're setting up that just doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah. And again, the bullseye criteria, I think here really ruins it. Because if it didn't have that bullseye criteria, I think there would be a lot more cases where your opponent's rolling so many defense dice, you want to cancel them down. But on the average attack, that's going to be between two and three attack dice, right? What, you roll three, you use this ability. Okay, your opponent's probably not rolling more than three agility dice anyway. And if you get less hits than that, like one or two, then okay, they can just evade one or they're only going to take one damage. Doesn't seem like a big deal. All right, so now that we've done some force powers, let's look at a talent upgrade. And this one I think requires a little bit more investigation, because I think what makes this bad is not necessarily that it was a failure in design. I think the card does exactly what it was intended to do, basically at the value it was meant to have. I think it's not usable for different reasons. So looking at the talent upgrade composure, and I'm going to mention this one because there's one huge exception that kind of violates what this card was intended to do. But at its baseline, composure is a talent upgrade for 1 point. It requires that the ship it's equipped to has the focus action or a red focus action. And it reads, after you fail an action, if you have no green tokens, you may perform a focus action. So composure, for me, falls into a category of cards that in order for you to get their effectiveness, you have to fail at something you're attempting to do. So we see this in cards like Dead Man's Switch, which your ship has to be destroyed in order for you to deal out some damage. This one falls into that category. And I have this general rule where you don't want to use abilities that require you to fail or make mistakes. So if you're in a situation where you're using composure, that means you tried to do an action, it didn't pan out the way you meant to, and you're just getting a little backup token here. So in a case like I would think would be like, oh, I tried to take, I tried to take a boost, I couldn't get the boost, now I'm in a vulnerable spot. Well, at least now I have a focus action.
And a focus action certainly has its own benefit in the game, but I don't like list building with the anticipation of failure, because then you play differently, at least kind of what I've seen. And for people that I've seen even like fly composure, so one example was Steven Reed was flying the double fire sprays and had composure on Iman and was never using it. Like, if you're just going to go and do actions that you know you can succeed in doing, why prepare for something that, you know, you're not trying to do?
Right. And this card is reasonably carefully designed to prevent abuse of it, except there's one major exception that I'll talk about in a second here. But the criteria for having this card take its effect is you can't really use it to token stack different green actions because it requires that you have no green tokens. So you're not going to be able to abuse this to get focus and evade. And that was the intention, I think, of this card, because I believe originally when the game released, it was a 2-point card. They dropped it down to one. It's really intended, I think, for beginner players as you're getting accustomed to the game. One thing that's easy to forget when you've been playing X-Wing for a long time is that a lot of the basic stuff is pretty hard to figure out when you're starting. You don't exactly understand how ships move, like how the templates relate to how the ship's going to move. And it's hard to really visualize that early on. So you might be pretty frequently failing barrel rolls or failing boost actions because you're not as familiar with the templates. The reason I wouldn't recommend players running this, even if they are beginners, is because I think it trains you to fail a little bit, where there should be a cost to you screwing up on an action. So you want to train yourself to be better at visualizing things, making those decisions. Okay, can I make this boost? I'm confident I can because I've practiced and I've tried this over and over again. Anytime you try to make a boost and you fail, you've actually learned something. You've got that little bit of visual memory to remember, okay, at this angle with an object about here, I can know that I'm not going to be able to succeed at this boost. And I think one of the ways you'll see top players succeed is that they're really confident and competent at that most basic level of stuff. So top tier players, when they're picking maneuvers, they know exactly where that ship's going to land. You know, they've visualized, they've practiced so much that they are going to be able to place that ship exactly where they intend to. And that's why they don't need cards like Composure, because they're going to make decisions that they know are going to succeed.
Yeah, so I guess all of those things aside, this card does work well in like one particular case, and it's with a resistance pilot that I've seen little play of, but Tim, you feel pretty good about this one, so go ahead and take it away.
Well, okay, so Temin Wexley in the T-70 X-Wing has the ability where, you know, he performs a certain speed maneuver, he can get a free boost action. And the reason that Composure works well with him is because it allows you to get focus and target lock in the same turn, which is typically pretty hard to do in second edition. And the reason that works is after you perform your action, you can then attempt a boost, intentionally choose a boost that fails, right? Pointing towards an asteroid you can't hit. And if you line that up right, you'll get the free focus action. Then at that point, you still get your normal action after your maneuver, since the, you know, Wexley ability is in addition to your perform maneuver step. Since you get that, you're able to then get a focus and a target lock in one turn, and then, you know, fire off some ordnance, get some fully modified shots. It's not like a super powerful combo because it requires a fair bit of setup and positioning, but it's out there.
Yeah, it's kind of an edge case. I think sometimes, depending on, you know, the ship or the upgrade or the pilot, there's some value in failing an action. So, I mean, like, the one example I'm thinking of is the B-Wings, where they get the focus and then you can attempt to do a linked barrel roll to get that stress for, like, Braylon Strom and Ten Num, who want those stress tokens to be able to use their pilot abilities. Like, there's value there, but there's not value in intentionally failing an action just to get Composure's ability.
Exactly. And I think in a lot of the cases, like you're talking about, Lulo Lampard did that a lot, where you would attempt a boost just to get the stress to get the extra die from Lulo's attack rolls. And that's a case where you're actually not paying for that investment, though. That's built-in value, right? Like, I like the B-Wing order of things, where you get the token before you get the barrel roll. So even if you fail, you still get the combo, right? That's kind of a feature of the ship more than anything. And even those are, like, exceptional cases, right? Where those are just a handful of ships that do that. This card could go on a wide variety of ships, but I really don't think, even if they brought it down to 0 points, generally there's something you want to put in that talent slot that's going to do better work for you.
And for the most part in second edition, like, it's relatively hard to fail actions. So with the change to the way locks work, I mean, you're going to take a lock on an obstacle if you have one in range. Mm. So it's hard to fail those. Or if you have, like, just for an example, like the Z95 Headhunter has the red barrel roll action. I mean, if you fail it, then you still get the stress. Then you can't do Composure because it's an action.
Exactly, yeah. So there's no way you're going to be able to combo it really well. So it's got a very narrow application. It was clearly intended. Like, I don't think this was a mistake to include this card in the game. I think it was intended to be, like, a beginner card or a card for people to learn if they're handling a lot of ships they're not familiar with. I just don't think it's going to lend to people getting better at the game.
Sure.
And I think it's one you just got to avoid. Unless you're really good with Snap Wexley. All right, so next up we have a gunner card, and there's actually a decent number of okay gunners in the game. Some of them are overcosted. This one, though, I don't think has, at least from what I can see, any real good value here. This one is Agile Gunner for 8 points.
Yeah, an Agile Gunner, what it does is during the end phase, you may rotate your mobile firing arc indicator.
So I think at face value, this one actually seems pretty okay. And it's one that I looked at early in the game. I didn't immediately say this was bad, but I've never had an opportunity where I thought, like, it was a good option to run. And one of those reasons is, actually, it reminds me of a card from first edition that we had on the Lancer Pursuit Craft called Gyroscopic Targeting, I believe. And basically that card lets you, after you performed a 3-5 speed maneuver, if I remember correctly, at the end phase of that turn, you can rotate your mobile firing arc. And I used to run that all the time. I was running Lancers a lot, and I really liked having that flexibility of, okay, I can set up my next turn, get this free action at the end phase. It cost me a couple of points, but that's no big deal. But one thing I learned over time was kind of the same lesson I was talking about with Composure, where it's better to make good decisions early on than to depend on corrective maneuvers to, you know, compensate for your mistakes.
Right.
And I think Agile Gunner kind of falls into that category.
Yeah, you're compensating for poor decision making, and you're spending 8 points to do it. I think one of the benefits in first edition of gyroscopic targeting was you could rotate that arc to kind of trick your opponent into thinking maybe you were going to go one direction over the other. However, I think because so many ways that you can rotate arcs in second edition, you know, either cost an action or it's red, like, don't set yourself up to need an extra turn to rotate it again. Like, just, you know, take the action in a turn where it seems good, but I don't spend 8 points to do it.
Yeah, and I think this is a case, too, where there's just other better options in the gunner slot, too. Up above, you know, around the 10-point threshold, you've got some good force users that could give your ship a force charge. You've also got gunners like, I don't know, Hotshot, the gunner that, like, lets you strip a token away. You can get more value out of attacks, which you're for sure going to use. A lot of times you're investing, if you're putting 8 points in for Agile Gunner, that's not a card you're necessarily going to need to use. If you made the right decision or you're in a position where your arc's exactly where you want it to be, that's just a wasted 8 points.
Right. And a lot of the ships that also have turret indicators are usually munitions carriers or some sort of, you know, bomb delivery device. So I'd rather have the points to spend for those munitions than for this gunner ability.
Absolutely. All right, so let's look at a crew card here. This one's called Novice Technician, and it comes in at just 4 points.
Novice Technician reads, at the end of the round, you may roll one attack die to repair one face-up damage card. Then on a hit result, expose one damage card.
So there's a big difference in the game. We know regen is a powerful effect. Anything that can get you a shield back, the best one right now being either R2-D2 or R2 Astromech for most factions. That's a great way. It helps you conserve points or regain points in a game where you've dipped below half points. And it's usable on a lot of different platforms. Jedi are using it really well. T-65 X-Wings like it. Anything that can take an Astromech and has at least two shields can benefit from an R2 Astromech. We also see like R2-D2 crew lets you get a shield back. It's a little bit different there. It's capped off. But it's a strategy that's been effective before and probably will be again. Novice Technician is not amazing. So I think to start, repairing face-up damage is cool, but I think it's one of those edge cases too where you're really going to have an opportunity to use this, right?
Right. And I guess kind of the thing that goes along with that, for me at least, when talking about Novice Technician is... like, they made crits so much more important in second edition, and they said that very early on. Like, we made crits and damage cards more relevant. Well, if you want to fix the card, you have to roll the result that's most common on the die, and if you have to flip another card and take a crit for a second time, like, I can't think of a single crit really in second edition that I would want to take twice.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, like, if you only have one damage card, this does nothing for you. If you've got multiple damage cards, who knows what you're going to flip, right? Because the ones that are the most devastating are probably, like, you know, hard turns or red now or increase in difficulty. Those ones that can really screw you up long-term for the game and they don't have a way to self-repair. You want to flip those down, but what are you going to flip? You know, double stress? That's not great. Flip a direct hit, take an extra damage? That's even worse now. You've gone to your damage threshold. Yeah, and having the hit result be the number you roll, that's just under half the time you're rolling that red die on this ability. Even for 4 points, which is not a huge investment in a crew, I don't think this is worth taking, especially when there's so many great crew options, at least for a couple of the factions. This one's not worth your time. Even if it goes down in points, I think that's still not worth the investment.
All right, moving on to the next card on our list. We have a modification card that is Galactic Republic only. It is the Synchronized Console upgrade card, which costs 2 points and requires you to have the lock or red lock action on your action bar.
Yeah, and this is one of those Republic cards that still just disappoints me. We and Carson on the show have talked about dedication a lot. We were glad to see that one tick down a little bit and to see the pilots that can take it go down in price. It's still not really anywhere close to where it's usable. It basically needs to be free and put that on the other ones. This one, Synchronized Console, I think has a little bit of a harder time. So this card reads, after you perform an attack, you may choose a friendly ship at range 1 or a friendly ship with the Synchronized Console upgrade at range 1 to 3 and spend a lock you have on the defender. If you do, the friendly ship you chose may acquire a lock on the defender. So, first of all, I hate this card because it's just kind of a word vomit of different clauses.
Yep.
Not quite as bad as Grappling Struts, but getting up there, I think, in word count and usability.
I remember talking about this one when we did the complexity episode, like, because there's just so much to keep track of here. But, like, Synchronized Console, I think, you know, it wants you to have multiple of them in your list, and having multiple of them is not worth the value.
Well, and like trying to read into the intention here, I think this was meant for lists that use ordnance, right? Like imagining a Republic list that has a bunch of missiles. This way, functionally, you could shoot any ordnance that has a target lock requirement that doesn't require you to spend the target lock. You could shoot a bunch of those in the row with a single target lock. So one ship has the lock, it takes lock action. It shoots, doesn't spend the lock, passes the lock to the next ship, who will then shoot, now can fulfill that requirement. So I think I kind of understand what the design they were going for was, but I think the application of this is just so difficult to pull off that there's a lot of problems because, I mean, you can use it if the other ship doesn't have Synchronized Console, but range 1's a pretty tight limitation there. And if you do have Synchronized Console and you get that pretty wide range of effect, having just the target lock and then not being able to spend it for the offense, I think is like, you can't really do that chaining strategy effectively because you're getting very minimally modified attacks.
Yeah, it's like you almost want like a Torrent Swarm with Synchronized Console and then a Jedi to kind of flank and get around the edge with it to get that additional range bonus. But I mean, problem with that is like there are better mods for the Jedi and Torrents are bad. So, I mean, and the other thing is like you've got the torpedo slot on the arc, but very rarely have I seen people actually fly arcs with torpedoes upgraded on them.
Yeah, I think right now all you're seeing Torrents and arcs for is their efficiency. So in order for this to be usable, we would not only have to have an option in the resistance that is more inclined to use ordnance, which we don't really have right now. I think you'd also have to see, I mean, man, what would be the ordnance you want to put this on? You'd have to have a lot of ordnance to get value out of it, or I guess just pass a target lock to another ship that is going to shoot yet. But I don't know. I don't feel like you put this on a Jedi or anything with a high initiative. So it's going to go to a low initiative shot, right?
I agree. And I think the other thing too is at 2 points, like, I feel personally that you might need like at least 3 ships upgraded with synchronized console to get good value out of it. But then you're spending 6 points on an ability that's kind of like, there are better things to do out there.
Yeah, you might not even use it too. They just, you know, spare parts canister to dump the target lock anyway. All right, so just a couple more cards on our list here. Next one up is another talent. This one's Empire only. It's called Ruthless. And it's kind of one of the parts of a cycle of upgrades we saw between the 3 core factions of the game. Rebels had Selfless, Scum has Fearless, the Empire had Ruthless. This one costs only 1 point, and it reads, while you perform an attack, you may choose another friendly ship at range 0 to 1 of the defender. If you do, that ship suffers 1 hit damage, and you may change one of your die results to a hit result.
I immediately dislike Ruthless as an Empire player for one reason. It's that most of the Empire ships don't have high hull values. So the value of doing, you know, 1 damage to your ship just to get a hit value that might be evaded anyway, not worth it for me.
Yeah, and I mean, this is one I guess I could see someone argue with. I think the biggest sell for me is just that balance of, like, you're taking the for sure damage and you're not necessarily dealing it. You know, the number of times where, okay, I'm dealing a damage to my ship, I'm shooting at a ship that already has low agility, so I'm just adding damage. That's a trade-off you have to see. Obviously, you could use this ability and choose a friendly ship that has a lot of hull, like a Decimator, if that's viable in your run. But again, you'd have to have a ship that wants to take this as a talent, because, you know, the talent slot is full of awesome options. Some of the most common ones, just like Predator, being able to reroll, that's a great ability to have. And that's really hard to beat out with even a cheaper talent. You know, this one's down to 1 here, so it's about as low as you can get short of being absolutely free. And I just don't see that. Yeah, I agree with you on that point. I think the most of the ships that are going to be fuel for this one to trigger the ability have just such a low hit point threshold that you're just putting yourself at risk of losing more points.
I mean, like, a Decimator could afford to take a damage, or, you know, maybe a Lambda. But I wouldn't want to do this to anything that doesn't have shields.
No,
as most of the Imperial faction.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, I just don't think this one has a place. And it's kind of sad because I like to see those faction-specific talents be interesting. Fearless is actually a pretty interesting card on the Scum side. Selfless has its place in the Rebels. This one I just don't think really meshes with what the faction's going for.
I definitely agree.
All right, so the last card we're going to talk about, this one might be controversial because I've actually seen this card used all over the place. Well, I mean, I've seen it equipped all over the place.
So, of course, we're talking about the cannon upgrade Jamming Beam, which comes in at a whopping 0 points.
Yeah. So this is what I see all the time. Anything that's got a weapon hardpoint. Recently, T-70 X-Wings always have this equipped. Anything that has a cannon slot is going to have this equipped if they're not using another cannon. This card costs 0 points. It's got a range limit of 1 to 2 out the forward firing arc, and it has the ability attack. If this attack hits, all hit or crit results inflict jam tokens instead of damage. Now, my biggest problem with this card is that even though I've seen it on many tables, especially in the last several months since it became free, I've never actually seen anyone use Jamming Beam for their attack.
Right, because most of the ships that can upgrade with a cannon have primary weapon values that are way better than ever using this ability.
Well, and it's that inherent trouble of when you're using Jamming Beam, you're denying yourself any damage, and you're only rolling 3 attack dice. And I think there's a core problem with that is if you're going to be able to jam someone with this cannon, why would you not be using a better primary weapon value so that you can actually deal the damage rather than just the tokens? Because all you're getting from the jam token is just removing modification down the road, when at the end of the day, the goal of the game is to get damage out. So I'm trying to imagine a control build where this would be a more valuable strategy than just dealing damage.
And most of the ships, I feel like specifically that I've seen using Jamming Beam as an upgrade, have lower initiatives. So, like, they're going to shoot after your ace shoots or some of the, like, the bulk of your swarm shoots. So at that point, like, what is the point of Jamming Beam? Like, I guess maybe get off a target lock that they didn't spend. But again, like, just do damage instead.
Yeah, just go for that core strategy of winning the game. It's funny. I expect to see this one for a long time down the road, and I look forward to the day when someone actually shoots me with a jamming beam. It'll be interesting.
I invite anyone that pairs up with me at a table to shoot me with a jamming beam. Please do
and,
it.
And win the game. Yeah. All right, guys. So that's a look at our quick list of a bunch of the bad upgrade cards in the game. Hopefully you got a better idea of perceiving value in things, just based on what we talk about. Sometimes these things can be deceiving, right? They look good at face value, and then over time you kind of understand their limitations and why they, you know, just don't work in your list. So, it is pretty fun to talk about things that are bad in X-Wing too. So John, I'm glad you're able to join me for that today.
Yeah, it was a good time.
And John, you wanted to plug an upcoming tournament in Minnesota, right?
Yeah. So coming up on August 10th, it's about two weeks out. We're going to have the Woodbury Gaming Goat Hyperspace Trial in Fort Snelling here in Minnesota. We're going to have myself as the marshal, and the legendary Big Victory Gang is going to be my co-judge.
Big Vic!
It's going to be really fun. We're going to have a ton of prizes. We're going to do a raffle. We've got some painted ships that a local guy painted up for us. We'll have one for each faction. If you come to the event and play, you'll get extra tickets for the ship of the faction you're playing that day, so that's pretty cool. We'll have a ton of other prizes, ships, games, some comics and books and things. It's going to be a good time. If you want to come out, the cost is $25. It's going to be a one-day event. You can PayPal the money to Andy Sherrill, the owner of the goat, or you can pay the day of the event. We just ask that you let us know that you're coming so we kind of have an idea of how many people are showing up. So we're going to have it at the Northern Star Council Base Camp facility, which is right off of Highway 62 in Fort Snelling there. So pretty central. If you're in the Minnesota area, come on down. And if you're listening to this and you don't live in Minnesota and still want to come out and play, please do. We would welcome your attendance, and we hope to see you all there.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for this event. We've got a lot of great people running it. I'm not going to be playing at this event. I'm actually hoping to be live streaming it. So hopefully you guys will see, we'll get some announcements out there in the future once I make sure all my live stream equipment still works well. But yeah, that'll be August 10th there. So if you're interested in going, make sure you reach out, let them know you're going, or you can pay in advance. It would be awesome to make this a huge tournament. I think it's going to be a really fun time. John, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back, Tim. Always a pleasure.
And thank all of you for listening to the show. If you like us, please go onto facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at @RadioTCXPodcast. And if you really enjoy the show, please go onto iTunes, leave us a 5-star review along with a written comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening. And of course, if you want to support us directly, which we really appreciate, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today. I'm actually hoping to get some more exclusive content up there on the page for our patron in the next month or so. So look out for that in the near future. Again, folks, thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.